You see people bring up toxic masculinity. A lot of times people bring it up because they just hate masculinity.
Sitting here telling men to cry more. That is why we have the problems we have in the world.
Learn how to deadlift. Learn how to squat. But that's part about being a man.
The moment a man is held hostage by what his woman thinks, he has lost his masculinity.
But specifically, what toxic masculinity represents is masculinity untethered from moral accountability to other men.
Welcome to Way of Manhood. And now your host, Dr. Adam Tyson.
Welcome to Way of Manhood. My name is Adam Tyson, and I'm the host of this show as we talk to young men about how to grow and mature in their faith. Gen Z, I'm talking to you, and I want to encourage you any way that I can here on the show, Way of Manhood. And be sure to follow us on Apple, Spotify, or Amazon, and download the free Fortis Plus app to listen anytime. And if you're listening on Apple, we'd love for you to leave us a review, or if you're on Spotify, consider tapping a star rating. Well, we're kicking off a two-part series today called The Sabbath Showdown in the Synagogue. There's three important S's for you, all from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. Let's kick off the show this way. I want to tell you about James Butler Hickok, better known as Wild Bill Hickok. He was a legendary figure in the old American West, and his skills as a gunfighter and as a scout, along with his reputation as a lawman, provided the basis for his fame. Although many of the stories told about him are sheer fiction, his nickname, Wild Bill, was inspired by his bravery as well as his daring behavior, particularly when it came to gun dueling with various opponents. On July the 21st, 1865, just after the Civil War, the town square of Springfield, Missouri, witnessed the very first quick draw duel ever recorded. And after some heated emotions about a gambling debt incurred at a local saloon, Davis Tutt and Wild Bill faced off. Davis was caught absorbing the fatal blow from a faster, quick draw Wild Bill. Now, while all showdowns don't end in immediate death, they all involve at least one party who seeks death as a solution to a bitter conflict. And such is the case in this showdown that we're going to look at in this show and in our next show, when the Lord Jesus Christ and his opponents, the scribes and the Pharisees, had a showdown. And let me say it this way, the Pharisees wanted Jesus dead. While in no way am I trying to compare the Lord of the universe with the Western hero Wild Bill Hickok, I do want us to look at the events in this Sabbath showdown in the synagogue. But first, let me just say, every great showdown has three things. Number one, a location. Number two, a target. And number three, an audience itching for blood. And in this chapter, Mark gives us all three. This is not a misunderstanding. This is not a polite theological disagreement. This is a showdown, and someone is already planning a funeral. And before a shot is even fired, Mark loads the scene, and he does so carefully. Let me give you a little context of what's happening here in this section of Mark. This showdown describes the last of five steaming conflicts between Jesus and the scribes and Pharisees. So allow me to quickly lay these out for you as if placing some fresh tri-tip or brisket on a searing heart hot barbecue grill on a summer afternoon, all right? The first one is this. Mark chapter 2, verses 1 through 12 records that first conflict, which was Jesus forgiving the sins of a paralytic and then healing him. And the conflict in question was, can Jesus really forgive sins? The second conflict is in verses 13 through 17, and that was the one where Jesus was eating with sinners. You remember Levi's tax collecting buddies? And it is appropriate for Jesus to eat with sinners or not? That's the question. And then the third conflict is in verses 18 through 22, which was Jesus encouraging his disciples to feast instead of fast. I mean, should the disciples be eating or fasting right now? And then in verses 23 through 28, the end of Mark chapter 2 records the fourth conflict, which was Jesus allowing his disciples to pick and eat grain on the Sabbath. Was this a defilement of the Sabbath? And if so, how can Jesus be Lord over the Sabbath? And so as you can see, there's a lot of Sabbath showdowns going on, and this builds us now to the fifth conflict that we see in our show today of Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, and this continues in helping us really understand the purpose and the reason for the Sabbath, as well as how it became an idolatrous lust for the Jews to keep it in the way they wanted to. Remember, the Sabbath was to be a sign between God and his people, that they might be reminded of the covenant that God had made with Israel at Mount Sinai. And if they were to remember the Sabbath and keep it holy, then God would bless them. And this is part of the covenant nature of God. God knew that they needed to have rest to help them be more devoted to the Lord. And so the conflict is not about whether or not the Sabbath should even be observed under the old covenant. And the conflict is not about whether or not it was still part of God's law to keep the Sabbath up until the resurrection. The conflict was about how was the Sabbath to be observed by the Jews at this time, God's way or man's way? You see, God had set up the Sabbath to be a blessing to his people. It was to be a time of rest and a time to reflect on God's holy character. But over the course of time, it had become a huge burden. And therefore, teaching on the Sabbath was needed so that God's people could observe God's law, God's way. So this isn't just some random healing story about a man with a withered hand. This is at the boiling point of these Sabbath showdowns. I mean, the grill is hot, the tri-tip is sizzling, but the Pharisees aren't hungry for steak. They're hungry for blood. And now Mark zooms in. And in this show and the next, I'm going to observe with you five events that transpire on this Sabbath showdown in the synagogue. Let's start with number one. First, we read about an innocent man. Here in verse one, it says, again, he entered the synagogue, that would be Jesus, and a man was there with a withered hand. So first take note, this happened on the Sabbath. Mark says, again, he entered the synagogue. Luke says in Luke 6:6, on another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue. And this is likely the very next Sabbath from Mark 2:23, which is the one when Jesus was accused of the disciples defiling the Sabbath by eating some grain from the field. Now, in this show, we are seeing that this conflict really does boil down to one's view of the Sabbath. The conflict over the Sabbath was possibly the biggest hang-up of all for the Pharisees. They weren't angry at Jesus for doing some good things to hurting people. They were angry that he did it on the Sabbath and that he even claimed to be Lord over the Sabbath. I mean, there were two observances of the law above all else that really defined the Jews and set them apart from the other surrounding religions. And that would be number one, circumcision, and number two, the Sabbath. If you remember, circumcision was the sign of the Abrahamic covenant, and the Sabbath is the sign of the Mosaic covenant. The Sabbath extended from sunset on Friday until sunset on Saturday, and instructions regarding the Sabbath are found in the Ten Commandments, particularly the fourth commandment, which is the longest of all of the commandments. And listen to that fourth commandment given in Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 11. You remember this, guys. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. But listen to what happens next. It says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Now, the point of this commandment was to set aside a day, the seventh day of the week, that was to be different from the rest of your week, where you would abstain from work and your family would worship the Lord and therefore rest in a way that would truly honor God. And the word Sabbath means to cease. It means to desist. This means that primarily the Sabbath was to be a day of rest. 6 days Israel was to labor, but on the Sabbath they were to rest. It doesn't actually instruct them to go to the synagogue. There wasn't one even at that time in Exodus chapter 20, but it doesn't precisely instruct Israel to sit under the preaching of the word. It doesn't tell them to give offerings. The main emphasis of the Sabbath was to remember and to rest and to keep it holy. And the main way to keep the Sabbath holy was to do no work. According to the Old Testament, God chose Israel from all the nations of the earth and instituted the Sabbath as an eternal sign and blessing of Israel's unique status. I mean, listen to what Ezekiel says in Ezekiel 20, 10 through 14. It says, "So I led them out of the land of Egypt and brought them into the wilderness. I gave them my statutes and made known to them my rules, by which if a person does them, he shall live. Moreover, I gave them my Sabbaths as a sign between me and them that they might know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them. But the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They did not walk in my statutes, but rejected my rules, by which if a person does them, he shall live, and my Sabbaths they greatly profaned. Then I said I would pour out my wrath upon them in the wilderness to make a full end of them. But I acted for the sake of my name, that it should not be profaned in the sight of the nations in whose sight I had brought them out." What is this passage telling us? It's telling us that the Sabbath was a sign that was to be kept between God and his people, that they might be reminded of the covenant nature of God who would sanctify his people. Now, don't go away, because this Sabbath showdown is going to keep heating up as we look at all that happens between Jesus and the Pharisees.
And we'll be back with more from Dr. Tyson in just a moment. He's in Mark 3 today, walking through the Sabbath showdown between Jesus and the Pharisees. Listen, young man, if you are listening to my voice right now, I want to challenge you. You're going to decide something in the next few years. Maybe you're deciding it right now, but you're definitely in the next few years going to be deciding the thing that's going to help build you into a man. That decision is going to follow you into the rest of your life, so I want to urge you not to sleepwalk into it. See, most guys will drift toward whatever school is the easiest. They're going to spend 4 years not even realizing they're getting stripped of the faith their parents spent so long helping them cultivate. Refuse to be that guy. And how you refuse to be that guy is to give an honest look at the Master's University before you commit to anything, because it's a place that will help sharpen your convictions instead of sanding them off. All of the professors at the Master's University, they believe the Bible they teach, and the men around you are Christians who take Christianity seriously. Dr. Adam Tyson is a professor at the Master's University himself. Also, Dr. Greg Gifford, another one of our fellows, is a professor there as well. I want to urge you, before you make a decision about what you're going to do with the next 4 years of your life, visit masters.edu/manhood and start the conversation that very well could change your path and change your life. The next thing that I'm going to challenge you to do, and it costs you absolutely nothing, is to put the Fortis Plus app on your smartphone or your smart TV or both. Look, it's absolutely free. It's never going to cost you a dime. None of our content is ever hidden behind a paywall, and it holds every single episode of Way of Manhood. It's also loaded with all of the content that is being produced and created by all of the other fellows here at Fortis Institute. New teaching is being added every single day. Look, you're already picking your phone up hundreds of times a day, literally. Why don't you try to aim a little bit of that to something that's going to make you stronger as a Christian? One more thing, this show, also Fortis Plus, and all of the content we're creating, all of it reaches you at absolutely no charge because other people pay for it. It's not free to produce, it's free for you to consume, and it's free because of men and women just like you. We call them gospel partners around here, and they've been impacted by the content we're creating so much that they wanted to join us so that more people would also have access to the content. And maybe that's you. If you want to join us as a gospel partner, we want you to be praying about what it would look like in your life to join us. All of the information that you would ever need about that is available to you right now at fortisinstitute.org. Now, let's get back to Dr. Adam Tyson. This is Way of Manhood.
Welcome back to Way of Manhood.
American men really are in crisis. You can look at the number of men committing suicide, the number of men struggling with depression, the number of fatherless homes.
And now back to your host, Dr. Adam Tyson.
Welcome back to Way of Manhood, and thanks for joining me on the show today. I want to encourage you to consider leaving a review on Apple, or maybe give us a star rating on Spotify, and share it with a brother who might need some encouragement in this area. We're talking about the Sabbath and the showdown that happened in Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. It's not just some random story about Jesus healing a man with a withered hand on the Sabbath. It's really a showdown between the Jews and Jesus. And as I was just saying before the break, the Jews did not keep the Sabbath faithfully in the Old Testament, particularly a part of the Old Covenant that they were supposed to keep. And so what happened is that Israel was rebelling and they ended up paying a consequence because God was going to act for the sake of his name. And God was going to act by punishing Israel for the sake of his glory. And so there in Ezekiel 20, verse 21 says, "But the children rebelled against me. They did not walk in the statutes, and they were not careful to obey my rules, by which if a person does them, he shall live. They profaned my Sabbaths. Then I said I would pour out my wrath upon them." Okay, so God's serious about people keeping the Sabbath his way. And then if you listen to Jeremiah 17:27, it says, "But if you do not listen to me to keep the Sabbath day holy and do not bear a burden and enter the gates of Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, then I will kindle a fire in its gates and it shall devour the palaces of Jerusalem and shall not be quenched." So what is that saying? It's saying that basically judgment was coming on Israel because they didn't keep the Sabbath in the way that God called them to. In one more passage, it talks about that would be 2 Chronicles 36, 20 through 21. It says, "He took into exile in Babylon those who had escaped from the sword, and they became servants to him and to his sons until the establishment of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah until the land had enjoyed its Sabbaths all the days that lay desolate until it kept the Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. So what is these verses all saying? It's saying that Israel went into exile for not keeping the Sabbath. And specifically, this passage in 2 Chronicles suggests that every seventh year Sabbath that God required for the land to be ignored. In other words, for the land to be barren, to take a year off from farming. Remember, they were supposed to plant and harvest for 6 years, and on the seventh year, they were to give a land a rest. And on the sixth year, God would provide a big enough harvest until they could plant again and harvest again on the eighth year. And so this is an important observation to make, that basically what happened is that Israel did not keep that seventh Sabbath. They didn't give the fields a year off. And so what happened is God punished them immensely and ended up taking them into exile for every Sabbath that they didn't follow, every seventh Sabbath they didn't follow, which means that they would be in exile for 70 years because it was 70 Sabbath Sabbaths that they skipped, 77 sevenths. I know I'm saying seven a lot, guys, but I'm just saying this matters because what happens is that Jews now overcorrected themselves. They realized that they were punished and they were taken into exile for 70 years, one for each seventh Sabbath that they didn't allow the land to lie dormant. And so the Jews had now gone overboard and they were now being legalistic in the first century and how they are insisting that the Sabbath should be kept. I mean, here's just a few examples. They taught that if you would look in a mirror on the Sabbath because you might be tempted to pluck a gray hair out of your hair, then that would be reaping and that would be breaking a Sabbath law. They would teach things like a donkey could be led out of the stable on a Sabbath, but if the harness and saddle had been placed on him, then that would be a work, and therefore you'd be violating the Sabbath. I mean, it just goes on and on with so many different specifics of ways that the Sabbath might be broken. And this is why the previous conflict about the disciples plucking grain on the Sabbath was such a major deal. When the Pharisees were accusing Jesus' disciples of breaking the Sabbath by gathering that grain, he reminded them that this is actually not breaking any Sabbath law given in the Bible. And truth be known, there was even a provision in the Bible for this very thing. And not only that, but Jesus gave an example about how David was allowed to eat the bread of the presence. Again, a lot of detail here, but young men, don't miss on this. Legalism is usually born out of fear. And that's what's happening with Israel trying to keep the Sabbath in an overly zealous way. I mean, Israel didn't want to disobey again, so they decided to over-obey. And they didn't trust God, and they trusted in their rules instead. And that's exactly how legalism always works. It sounds spiritual. It looks disciplined. But underneath, it is unbelief and fear. Rules feel safer than trust. And sometimes checklists feel easier than obedience from the heart. And so that's why Mark 2 ends with Jesus saying, hey guys, you're focusing too much on the Sabbath. He said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath. And so this is really the beginning of a transition from an old covenant understanding to a new covenant understanding of the Sabbath. And make no mistake about it, Jesus is saying that he and his disciples have properly kept the Sabbath that was given in Exodus 20. And he is saying that he is the one who gave the Sabbath in the first place. And if he is Lord over the Sabbath, then he must be God. So this is clearly a claim to Jesus's divinity. And so when Jesus says this, he isn't softening the Sabbath, he's claiming ownership of it. If I say I'm Lord over your house, I'm either insane or I own the deed. And that's kind of what Jesus is saying. I own the deed on all theology. I mean, he's not just tweaking theology, he's declaring deity. And so this is what's going on in the setting, and this is what happens to the man with a withered hand. When it describes that man with the withered hand, some, according to Jewish tradition, say maybe this guy was a brick mason and hurt his hand at work. Others say, no, the grammar and the verb tense show that he most likely had a congenital defect, meaning he was born with it. Either way, the word withering literally means to become dry to the point of being immobilized, which meant this innocent man could not move his hand in any productive way, which likely kept him from doing work. And so he was probably seen as an outcast or as an embarrassment, certainly a shame to the community. And many may have been shunned like him. You might be tempted to shun a straggly, stray, limping dog in your yard, especially if it was foaming at the mouth. Have you ever had a stray cat come into your yard? I'm just saying that's how they would treat this guy. This word withered would put him in a low socioeconomic status, and he was probably disdained by these pious, righteous Pharisees. And so in a sense, what we're seeing here is that this man had a great need, and Jesus was the one who was ready to meet this need. Love always trumps legalism. And so what we see here now is let's move to the second event that happens in this Sabbath showdown, and that would be an irreverent accusation. Look at verse 2 of Mark chapter 3. It says, and they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath. Why? So they might accuse him. There's the secret right there, right? The scribes and the Pharisees are not seeking to learn from Jesus. They are seeking to condemn Jesus. They are not seeking to be taught, but rather to trap Jesus in their own skewed man-made law. They didn't care so much about what could reveal Jesus to this fellow that he's God and he's a healer, but what would he reveal? In other words, if he did, they would accuse him of breaking one of their rules of the Sabbath. If Jesus does anything that crosses the line with them, they're ready for the showdown. And that's just the problem. If there really is a God-given rule against healing someone on the Sabbath, then Jesus should have obeyed it. But guess what? There's not one. And remember, the scribes and the Pharisees had added to God's law their own lists of what they thought should have been included. And this included 39 classes of work that were forbidden on the Sabbath, things that you might expect, like forbidding plowing or hunting or butchering. But they also forbid things that you wouldn't expect, like tying or loosening knots, sewing one more stitch, writing more than one letter, or walking more than 3,000 feet. And so again, they're always out to try to trap Jesus. They didn't bring notebooks here. They brought binoculars. They're watching Jesus. They're not listening for truth. They're waiting for a mistake. And that's the difference between a disciple and a critic. They're watching Jesus carefully because they wanted to accuse Jesus openly. The end of verse 2 really shows us their heart. These prideful scribes and Pharisees had put their man-made law over God's law, and they were so proud of it that they were willing to do whatever they had to do in order to catch Jesus doing something wrong. That's all they really cared about. And let me just say this. It never goes well when you accuse Jesus, as the Pharisees did, or accuse God, as Job did at the end of the book. God confronted him in a big way. And yet, if you're honest, you and I struggle at times to say something like, God, where were you? And it's shockingly easy to accuse God when he doesn't behave according to your expectations. So here's where I'm warning you, gentlemen. Don't become a Pharisee. Don't think you know better than God. If you're to say something like, how could God let this happen? Then that's Pharisee talk in modern clothes. So here we are. Before a single miracle is performed, before a hand is healed, before anyone stretches out anything, the lines have already been drawn. On one side stands Jesus, the Lord of the Sabbath, and on the other side stands the Pharisees, armed with rules, binoculars, and accusations. I can't wait to share with you what happens as we come back next week to look at the Sabbath showdown. Let me pray for you that God would help you today to love Christ with all your heart. God, thank you for the opportunity to look at this conflict between Jesus and the Pharisees. Help us to never fall into legalism, but help us to love others like Jesus loved this man with the withered hand. And it's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.
This has been Way of Manhood from Dr. Adam Tyson, a production of Fortis Institute. Our website is fortisinstitute.org, and it is your central hub for all things Fortis. If you've enjoyed Way of Manhood with Dr. Adam Tyson, would you please consider subscribing and sharing with your friends and church family? Also, would you prayerfully consider joining this labor of love by becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner? And until next time, go serve your King.